So I've never really started the show this way, but what does Hub Arkush think?
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I just think that the way he's carried himself is inappropriate.
Rich Eisen.
I think he's a bad guy.
Come on, man.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I think they should take him off the panel. They should take him off the panel and they should replace him.
Earlier on the show, co-host of Peacock's Brother from Another, Michael Smith. Coming up, Sunday Night Football analyst Chris Collinsworth. Plus, executive producer of Sunday Night Football, Fred Godelli. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Hour number one was, as they say, quite the ride. We came on the air, Antonio Brown was still technically a Buck, and now he's been released. And boy, did he put everything on his Instagram. He put everything on his Twitter, and it's just a whole hot mess. Adam Schefter, our friend, my longtime college buddy on the worldwide leader in sports, saying, per Jason Light, general manager of the Bucks, like, you can use my name.
Yeah, quote me.
Brown in the last couple of weeks has asked for his incentives to be guaranteed, and the team told him no. And that's when you tell Antonio Brown no about money, then suddenly that's where he says he doesn't feel the love anymore. So just like we hear all the time, follow the money. But at any rate, there's football to be played. Bruce Arians just showed up with shades and camouflage Buccaneer material. He's going through his press availability right now. He did confirm that Brown's no longer a Buck, and I don't read lips. And with Arians, sometimes it's dangerous to do so. I'm assuming he's basically saying I'm only going to talk about the players that are here. But yada, 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 and so forth. Albert Breer will be joining us in about 20 minutes' time to talk about all of this. But joining me here on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line is one of my favorites. He's one of the all-time greats at doing what he does for Football Night in America and Sunday Night Football, the perennial Emmy Award nominee and winner, getting set for a big Sunday night game with Al Michaels in Las Vegas, Nevada, with the Chargers and the Raiders on NBC. Chris Collinsworth here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you doing, Chris?
What's happening, brother?
That's a loaded question. So let's talk about the football aspect of this, because Godwin's out, and you were calling that game when Michelle Tafoya gave that report before Godwin got hurt that Brown was coming back. Now he's gone. Playoff Lenny might be less than. What do you make of the Bucs' chances of repeating right now as we're sitting here prior to Week 18, knowing what we know about who's at Brady and Arians' disposal?
Well, they still have Tom Brady, right?
Yes, they do.
I'm sure about that one.
Correct.
And so when we know that Brady can go into Green Bay and win a game, we're pretty sure about that one.
Yep.
I think it's way too early to say they can't do it. I mean, they've got Tyler Johnson's a nice player, obviously Gronk. They could go three tight ends if they wanted to and build a game plan. I think where you get hurt is when something like that happens in the middle of a game and you have no idea. But when you can game plan around Antonio Brown now, I mean, would you rather have him? Yeah, you'd rather have him, but I don't know. Not under these circumstances.
Chris Collinsworth here on the Rich Eisen Show. Would you say Green Bay then is, in fact, not just by due of their one seed, but by what you have seen, including what you just saw, Chris, the team to beat in the entire NFL right now with a week to go in the regular season?
Yeah, I think you have to go there with that team now. They've got the hot quarterback, and they've got enough around it, and you think that maybe they end up getting a few of these people back, does Bakhtiari come back? Does Jair Alexander come back? Does Josh Myers come back, their center? So there's all kinds of different things out there that could come into play here. But I think even if you just go, that's it, we're going to play with what we have. Based on what I've seen, they seem to be the most consistent team. And really one of the main reasons why, Rasul Douglas has been unfriggin' believable. Their quarterback, five interceptions, a couple of pick sixes, game winners. I mean, it's been phenomenal what this guy who is released and on practice squads has come in there and done for this football team and covering up the hole left by Jair Alexander.
So is Brady Rogers, who's your MVP? Because you also have all those PFF pieces of information in front of you, war and things like that, that you can actually put everything together, Chris, and put together a pretty solid thought, having seen these guys in front row all year long. Who do you have for me on that?
This is how bad a boss I am. I went out on national television and said that I would take Rodgers. And obviously, PFF said Tom Brady. So sometimes that's how it works out. But I really believe, and now Brady's in a little bit of the same boat too, with the injuries and the different things. But I mean, you go down the list here of what Brady has been missing this year. I mean, Bakhtiari, Elgton Jenkins, who's probably their second best lineman, the rookie Josh Myers, who was their starting center, Billy Turner now out for extended time. The only consistent player up front has been Royce Newman, the rookie. And then you have Robert Tonyan, who is his top tight end, right? You have Randall Cobb, who's out now, going down the list. So I think that as I watch them play this season without Aaron Rodgers, you go, how many games does this team win without him? And, you know, where we see Kansas City, I guess, was the game that we saw him without him. And Kansas City, obviously, is a good team, but it was the offense that just didn't score or get it done in that game. So, I it's the old pull them off your team and what happens to your team. PFF will tell you Tom Brady. My eyeballs have told me Aaron Rodgers, but I think it's really close.
Chris Collinsworth here on the Rich Eisen Show. And obviously, you've got one of the greatest front row seats for Sunday Night Football, but a literal one there in Cincinnati for a Bengals team that is just so terrific with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase right now. How good do you think the Bengals can be right now in these playoffs that they have gotten at least one home game sealed and cemented? What do you think about that one, Chris?
Yeah, the interesting thing about this team, as far as I'm concerned, is they are the team that if you had to say, all right, of the other AFC teams in the playoffs, you know, who has a chance to go score points with Kansas City? Because that's probably in Buffalo, you know. So I would say Cincinnati does. Now, can they hold up on defense? Does this offensive line hold up under playoff sort of pressure? I don't know. But I'll tell you, I'll take Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, C.J. Uzama, and Ja'Marr Chase, and go play anybody. The running backs are tough. So I think this is a team that is very much has the possibility of being that high-scoring team. I tend to think they're probably a year away. But Joe Burrow has been the best player in college football that PFF has ever seen. Last year came out and was brilliant as a rookie. Got hurt. How many quarterbacks do we see come back and be terrible the year after a knee injury?
Right.
If anything, he was the best he's ever been. And Ja'Marr Chase, the two biggest games of the year that I thought Cincinnati played this year were at Baltimore to sort of create that paradigm shift that they could compete there. They blow out the Ravens there, and he was going against Marlon Humphrey, who – for my money, he's one of the best quarterbacks in all of football. He put on a phenomenal show. And against Kansas City, I thought the game was over. It was 14-0 in Cincinnati. And all of a sudden, Ja'Marr Chase did what he's done all season long, which is catch one, make seven people miss, score a touchdown, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, 14-7. Hey, you know, they got a chance, and they were down 14 again. And then they got lucky with the kickoff return getting called back. So there were a lot of things that happened. But as far as a guy that his teammates look at him and believe that these two guys have magic within them, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase come about as close to the top of that list right now for an organization that isn't one of the rock star organizations that you can name.
Chris Collinsworth here on the Rich Eisen Show. And Chris, you called thousands of games. Have you ever called a game where winner goes in, loser goes home, but both teams just are going to take 90 kneel downs because they both get in with a tie? You ready for that for Sunday Night Football with the Chargers and the Raiders?
Chris,
what do you think?
I'm just, and where is that game played? In Las Vegas? There might be a revolution up there. I mean, it is bizarre. But, okay, let me lay this scenario on you.
Yes, sir.
I think that they're going to do, you know, take a knee the whole game. I don't even think that's a possibility. Do I think that somehow if the first game, you know, goes the way that these two teams need and you end up with 2 minutes to go in overtime.
That's right.
In some bizarre way.
Yep.
And you're kind of looking over at the other bench and maybe there's somebody has timeouts left. And you just kind of go, all right, I'm going to take this first knee. And if they call a timeout, then game's on.
But if they don't. That's the smoke signal? That's the signal?
Could that be the smoke signal? I don't know. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, your job as a coach is to get your team in the playoffs.
Yes, correct.
It doesn't matter how. It doesn't matter how you do it. If you're telling me they're down to the last minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes of that game.
Yeah.
And you can take a knee and guarantee your team is in the playoffs. I mean, you hand it off, they might fumble it and return it for a touchdown. I mean, we've seen that before,
yep.
Right? So if taking a knee at the end of that game to play for a tie is what you do to get in your team in the playoffs, I absolutely do that. And, I mean, how many times have we seen this in the past? We argue about it all the time, you know, with teams that – don't play their starters, and it's going to impact somebody else's playoff position and going to guarantee somebody doesn't get in the playoffs. But you have the right to do what is in your best interest for your team to make the playoffs. And do I think any of this is going to happen? I 100% do not think it is. Do I think that if I were in that position at the end of a game and I could kneel down and play for a tie that put my team into the playoffs, would I do it? You're darn right I would.
Of course, no doubt about it. And for this to happen, the Ravens have to the Steelers have to beat the Ravens, and then the Jaguars have to somehow pull it all together to beat a Colts team that is in a win-and-in scenario. And then, you know, a tie would get both the Chargers and the Raiders in. And I had Brandon Staley on the show Tuesday, and I asked him point blank, would you do it? And I apologize for asking that question of an NFL head coach in advance. And he's just like, of course not. You know, like, we respect the game too much. But your point is exactly right. Like, let's just say this does go to overtime because you can't lose the game. If you lose the game, you're out. You have to force overtime. Overtime is forced. And then they try to win. Whoever gets the toss tries to win the game, gets 3 points. The other team gets 3 points. And it's like a minute and a half to go. What does that team do? And then maybe that's the smoke signal. I'm going to take a knee here, and the other team burns a timeout. You're like, all right, screw it. Now that you just cost yourself a playoff spot. Or do you just let the time run out? I would let the time run out. You're in, right?
I would let it. I heard somebody say that, let's take the worst-case scenario, that they take a knee from the beginning of the game and do it all the way through. That the commissioner would have the power at that point to declare a double forfeit, right? And that's it. Neither one of you are going to the playoffs based on what you did. I don't think any of that would happen in the scenario where it's end of game, though. I don't.
Yeah, I've got Fred Gadelli, by the way, on in hour three because I want to talk Madden with him. I'd love to hear his stories. And you know, your producer Fred, and you know, I'm going to ask him later on. You know. Can you flex out of a game after one kneel down in the first quarter? Like, but there's no other games you can flex into. You're out. You're done. You're there. You're in Vegas. You and Al. Maybe you and Al could go grab a steak at that point. You and Al could just go grab a steak if something like that happens.
Oh, yeah. As an announcer,
yeah,
we would be killing that
game. I know.
From an announcer standpoint,
oh, yeah.
Man, now you get to go anywhere you want with anything you want. Right. It would be It would be like talk radio, baby, and I did that for a long time.
Yes, you did. And Chris Collinsworth here on the Rich Eisen Show, and you were kind enough to be on my podcast just getting started about the origin stories of my guests, and it was an NFL Voices of the NFL season. And before I let you go, I'd love to hear a story that I had no idea that before Al Michaels came over to NBC, the idea that Dick Ebersol, the grand poobah of NBC Sports for so many years, was to have you and Madden in the booth together, calling the game together, and you actually did an audition to make it just a tryout just to see, because you were already there with NBC, but just to see, you know, what's what? What was that like, you and Madden in a booth together calling a game, you know, in quotes, Chris? What was that like?
They flew us out, like the entire NBC sports department. So John Madden has that studio. You've probably been out there in Pleasanton,
yeah.
So they flew us on like a 747, picked me up in Cincinnati, flew everybody out there. This plane had two bedrooms on it. I was like, what the heck? So we go out and we sit in the studio, and we're just going to call a playoff game that's happening. It was Denver and somebody. And the theory was that they were going to have me do play-by-play and John do color, but really not really do play-by-play, just kind of both of us, you know, talk about the game. And so we did it. And honestly, I was terrible. I'm just going to tell you. I was just like, I knew. I'm sure other people knew, whatever. So we get finished afterwards. So I'm sitting there with Dick, and he goes, oh, you know, that went really well. And I went, okay. And he goes, I want you to know that the job is yours if you want it. If you want to do play-by-play with John, the job is yours. So there's a big pregnant pause there. And then he comes back and he goes, or I think I have a chance to get Al Michaels. And I just started laughing out loud. I can remember it like it was just, I said, are you crazy? You get a chance to go get Al Michaels. Are you nuts? I go, come on, Dick. That's the biggest no-brainer of a choice I've ever heard in my whole life. But I do like to tell Mike and Al both, but that neither one of them would have had a job but for me.
Well, but again, obviously, I know it's your job to watch everything except the ball, right? So now here you are in a position calling a game that you're supposed to watch the ball. But what was it like? You know, it had to be out of body just sitting there calling a game with Madden, right? Just sitting there.
It was awesome.
Right?
Yeah, no, it was great fun. We were having a good time. And if I had it to do over again, I probably wouldn't do any play-by-play.
Right.
Right? I would just sit there and
like the Manning cast, right? Like the Manning cast
yeah,
does
yeah,
right
like
now,
like the
right?
Manning cast, exactly. Like, okay, you got to figure out who has the ball. Or maybe I would at least just tell who caught the ball or something like that. But it's really intriguing to be sitting next to that man. You know, there are so many different things that he's done in his lifetime, and just the fact that I got to do that, mm-hmm. right, was so cool for me. I think it would have evolved into something that could have been fun? Yeah, I think we would have survived the day. But come on, Al Michaels and John Madden versus Chris Collinsworth doing play-by-play with John Madden, that was a no-brainer there.
Chris, have a great time on Sunday night. Personally, we think whoever wins the toss, their first place should be a fake knee and then throw deep, and I think that should be the Raiders.
Oh.
I think that would be like in honor of Al Davis and Madden to just fake the knee and then throw deep and then just try and win the game. Like that would be great.
Light the flame there in that stadium. There you go.
That's gonna be a heck of a night. You know, obviously it's their first home game since the passing of John Madden, and the fact that you're there and Sunday Night Football's there, it's gonna be great. I can't wait. And for so much on the line, I appreciate the call. Enjoy it.
All right, buddy. Thanks, Rich.
Yeah, and we'll see you out here in L.A. for the Super Bowl. We'll check you out. That's Chris Collinsworth. Everybody should check out Pro Football Focus as well, Sunday Night Football. They would torch the place if they start taking knees on Sunday night. You're rooting for the Jaguars so hard.
I just want it to get to the point where it's like, maybe it happens, and we all have to guess.
During that conversation, Brady and Arians have spoken. Albert Breer will join us next about what's next in everything going down in Tampa. So much to impart to you. And Fred Godelli, the longtime producer of Sunday Night Football and Madden's longtime producer, will be joining us in Hour 3.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Terrestrial Radio Network, along with our happy family on Peacock and SiriusXM and Odyssey and our podcast and our YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show fans. We appreciate you hitting subscribe buttons for all of those where there is one. Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you doing? Oh, by the way, we had to get our own AB. Right?
Hey, that's right.
Your shirt's on, right, Albert?
Exactly.
Yeah, my shirt's on. I hope I'm a little bit more stable. I just want to check on you, Rich. I want to make sure everything's okay 6 days out now. I
mean, I've been... Oh, wow.
Yeah, Albert! Yeah!
Wow.
Hey. And that's coming from somebody who posts. That's coming from somebody who knows what it feels like. I've been there. 31-0 against Clemson in 2017.
It's all right.
So I've been there before.
It's okay, Albert. It's a first place Big Ten season with a 42-point game against your alma mater. That's always up on the board, and it's going to be there for at least another, forever and ever. But, 300 days, another 300 days. It's okay. But I like that you come out firing, Albert. I just love that you have just zero chill and shame. Fantastic. Same as it ever was.
We made some coaching changes in the aftermath. We'll see how all of that plays out.
Well, let's get to the task at hand here. It about money, huh? Is that what this was about? Or what?
Yeah.
Is that what this is?
I heard a little bit of your preamble there. And, I just think it's this constant thought that, and I think a lot of times, coaches and players can convince themselves this, that when the guy gets into our environment, it's going to be different. And, I hesitate to say it's just about money, because if it's not one thing, it's the other with the guy. You know what I mean? Like, so we can get down to the details and we can talk about the injury and the disagreement over why he left the sideline and where the truth is, whether he was hurt. And we're going to hear different versions of that. But the truth is, Rich, it's just always something, And, if you want to go back to how he wound up blowing his way out of Pittsburgh, it was over losing a team MVP award to Juju Smith-Schuster, a guy who was in his position group room, won the team MVP, and that pissed him off sufficiently that he blew his way out of a place that he had been for 9 years. In Oakland, it was the weird thing with the helmet and then the feet and all of that. And then in New England, it was, basically publicly taking shots at ownership after he had been there for a total of 8 or 9 days. So, I think it's hard to look at this situation based on the history that's here and say that it's anything else but Antonio Brown being Antonio Brown.
And it's over, right? Or what's the aftermath of this? I mean, it's over in terms of them talking about it, but what is the aftermath of all this?
Well, I mean, let's do the player side first. I mean, I have to think this is the end of Antonio Brown's career. He said he's going to get surgery, and when he comes back from surgery, he'll be what? I got to look up how old he is, but he's in his 30s. I think you have to kind of look at each of these situations and you know, in the previous situations, you could maybe couch it one way or the other. You know, in Pittsburgh, it's, well, you know, he's sick of being there and he wanted a new start. In Oakland, you could say they weren't winning. In New England, you could say, well, that's a stringent environment. I mean, in Tampa, he won a Super Bowl there, right? Like, he had a chance to win another one. The quarterback, despite what he says, had his back 100% through everything and kept giving him opportunities and kept wanting to work him into the offense more. And Bruce Arians runs maybe the most player-friendly culture in the NFL, right? The players have a huge part in running that team. And I think if you're another team, you have to look at that and say, if it's not going to work, if it wasn't going to work there, like, who are we to say that it's going to work where we're at? You know, like, I don't know how anybody could look at that and think, like, with a change of scenery, this guy's going to be different. So I just think it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for him to find a job anywhere after this. As for the team, I do think it's a blow. You know, if this had happened last year, I don't think it would have been as big a deal. Like, last year, like, both him and Gronkowski were sort of like bonus weapons because it was the COVID year, because those guys came in late, because everything was sort of, they did things to incorporate those guys, but they weren't really integrated into the offense. This time around, I mean, when they went through that month where they didn't win a game, Rich, and Brady kind of was up and down and struggled a little bit, a big part of that was that Gronk and AB were out, you know? And so, you know, I think both those guys have become such integral parts to what the Bucs are offensively because of their relationship with the quarterback, because the quarterback trusts them. And so, you know, I think this year, you know, you add, you know, all of that I just said to the fact they're all already down Chris Godwin. And I actually think on the football field, it's a pretty significant loss for the Bucs.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show, senior NFL reporter from the MMQB of Sports Illustrated on our program. So the quarterback that will grab the most headlines in the offseason that is essentially started for so many, who's it going to be? What do you got for me on that front? What do you crystal ball it? Is it Rodgers? Is it is it Deshaun Watson, Russell, Baker? What do you got for me on this?
I mean, front? I think it feels like maybe what we thought was going to happen last year might happen this year with, you know, some dominoes as far as the quarterbacks go. I actually think the Packers are going to win the Super Bowl. So okay. If the Packers win the Super Bowl, I think you've sort of subtly heard Aaron Rodgers' tone changing a little bit in several different places. Like the way he talked about Brian Gutekunst, I think the appreciation, the emotion you saw after he broke Brett Favre's record, right? Like, and kind of like how he had this appreciation for where he is and getting to play in Lambeau. And so I actually think there's a potential there that Aaron Rodgers has a new contract with the Packers and winds up staying there in 2022. So I'd say like Watson and Wilson will probably be the two. You know, Watson, obviously, you know, I think his legal situation plays into everything. They've been waiting to move him. And I think he will be moved. And I think if there's clarity in the legal situation, there's going to be a huge market for Deshaun Watson out there. You know, and then I think with Russell Wilson, maybe it plays out like, you know, things did with Matthew Stafford last year. Depending on what happens, you know, with Pete Carroll and John Schneider there, I could certainly see them having a meeting and, you know, kind of like I said, like what happened with Stafford in Detroit, they sort of negotiate a clean break. So then Wilson and Watson are out there. And then I think, you know, on the kind of the secondary level, Baker Mayfield, Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, the Derek Carr situation in Vegas is sort of interesting because next year will be a contract year for him. But I would think the Raiders try to lock up Derek Carr long term. So, you know, I think you not only have like the big box pieces, like the guys like Wilson and Watson out there, but you also have, you know, the second layer of quarterbacks that could wind up becoming available.
What is the plan for Baker Mayfield in Cleveland now?
You know, I think the way that the Browns are looking at it, this is just my sense of it. You know, going into the year, it was, do we pay him at the top of the market? And part of the problem, Rich, is that there's no, like, B-level, quarterback contract out there to work off of. And so, like, you know, that's why, you know, a lot of these decisions have become yes or no. Do you believe the guy's a franchise guy or not? And if you do, you pay him at the top of the market. If you don't, then you wind up letting him go. And I think right now, if you're the Browns, you have a hard time wrapping your head idea of paying Baker Mayfield $40 or $45 million a year. And then I think if you're not going to do that, you got to ask yourself the very real question: can we go through the awkwardness of playing out his fifth year option here, where it was already awkward a little bit this year, you know, with some of the stuff that happened on Instagram and everything else. And so, you know, my guess is, you know, they're going to look at it and they're going to say, if we aren't willing to pay Baker $40 million a year, let's see if there's a quarterback out there that we are willing to give that money to. So, you know, I think, you know, the Browns will at least investigate Watson. I think they'll at least investigate Wilson, Rodgers too, if he winds up being out there. And, you know, I think they view themselves as being in very much a win now window, you know, where it's, you know, like I think the roster, they feel like their roster's right there. And so, you know, the question becomes, can they land one of those guys? And if they can't, do they stick with Baker or do they maybe go with some sort of Band-Aid for right now where it would be a little bit less awkward than bringing Baker back in a contract year? And maybe that winds up being somebody like Jimmy Garoppolo.
Wouldn't it be, what's the word, ironic or interesting, however you want to put it, that the Browns would do that but can't land one of those guys because the Steelers do, right? Is that the is that the Steelers' plan too? What you just kind of laid out?
Steelers, yeah. I mean, I don't think the Steelers have really – I don't think the Steelers know exactly what they're going to do yet. I think part of the issue the Steelers have is they're depleted to some degree from a draft pick standpoint, and their cap is a little bit of a mess going into next year. And so, you know, I think with the Steelers, you know, the question is, do you want to do like a full reset at the position and draft a rookie and start over that way? Do you want like a Band-Aid, you know, and maybe that's like a Ryan Fitzpatrick or someone like that, like a Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, do you want to take the big swing? And the big swing, again, would require capital that they don't necessarily have right now. Maybe they can create it, but they don't have it right now. And that hasn't generally been their way. And so, I think it feels to me like the most likely scenario, like what they would like to do, is go into the draft and find a rookie to replace Ben Roethlisberger with. The issue with that, of course, is that, I mean, you look at this year's group, Rich, and there's not like a Trevor, like last year, the five guys, right, like Lawrence, Fields, Wilson, Lance, and Jones. Like, I don't know that there's a single quarterback in this year's draft that would crack that group. Like, whoever the number one guy is, I think would probably have gone sixth last year. And so, you know, that's going to be the question for a lot of these quarterback needy teams, which could drive up the market for the veterans. Is there a rookie out there that we think can be a real difference maker for us? And, you know, we'll see if Kenny Pickett and Matt Corral and Malik Willis and, you know, all these guys that are going to be going into the draft can work over the 3 or 4 months to come to drive their stock north. But as it stands right now, I think there are going to be more than a few teams that are going to go into the draft cycle without a single first-round grade on any of the quarterbacks.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. And on the coaching front, an interesting name that might be interested in getting a gig is Jim Harbaugh, interested in going back to the league where he had 44 wins and took a team to the Super Bowl and almost won it in the same league where Urban Meyer is now the standard for the biggest triple Lindy flop and biggest blown opportunity in the history of coaching. So... it's okay. Everything I just said is factually correct.
It's true.
Okay. What do you think? Is Harbaugh interested, and do you think that interest could be mutual?
Yeah. Here's what I think, Rich. I know. What I know about Jim from having covered him all those years ago, you know, when he was in San Francisco, he tends to hold grudges. And like, I don't know that there was – I don't know that he was as happy about taking the pay cut last year
right.
as, like, he may have let on. And so if he can make Michigan squirm – and not saying the school in general. I mean, like, I don't mean it that way.
No,
but,
no.
Like, the people who yep. – if he can make the people who made him take the pay cut squirm a little bit and maybe – get make them a little uncomfortable and then wind up getting a new contract out of it. Like, I don't think that'd be a horrible result for him. Right. Like, and maybe, you know, as part of that, you work in some sort of like NIL deal where we're going to do this and this and this to help you get players, everything else. So I think that that's one possibility. The other possibility is that he was sufficiently pissed off last year where, he does want to look around. And by the way, like when there was a question about his future last year, I can tell you, intermediaries put his name in front of several NFL teams. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't interest then, but based on how he's bounced back this year, I think, at least from a team or two, there'd at least be a curiosity. We'll see. I can't tell you what his intention is, but, I certainly don't think he's done much to shoot down the idea of this possibility. And, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks here to see what happens with him. Because obviously he had great success at the NFL level. I do think that, to some degree, getting that close to winning a Super Bowl and not getting there does leave a bit of an unfinished business for him at the NFL level.
And then you had a great piece this week about Trevor Lawrence, because amongst all the many reasons why Urban Meyer flamed out in such a spectacular faceplant fashion, Albert, from kicking his kicker to not taking the flight back from Cincinnati and what he was doing in Ohio after not taking the flight back from Cincinnati, is that the one guy who was evaluated as the most surefire prospect coming into the NFL is leaving his first season in the NFL essentially, potentially not able to be evaluated, Albert. And so you had quite a piece on that. I want to give you the floor on what you found out about what people think of Trevor Lawrence's first year and viability moving forward for Jacksonville.
Yeah, sure. So I talked to a number of different scouts, coaches that have played against him this year. So these are guys that have actually looked at him and evaluated the tape. And obviously you're taking everything into account when you're doing that. So the first thing all these guys said is the situation around him wasn't good. Mm-hmm. But they didn't do enough creatively to get the most out of him. The skill talent around him wasn't very good. Losing DJ Chark, was a big deal because they didn't have a ton to threaten defenses with to begin with. So there's all that. But there were also some things that I think, at least raised some concern. The first was the ability to process and how quickly he sees the field. And, I think part of the evaluation at Clemson wasn't that he couldn't do it. It was that you didn't see him do it. And then at Clemson, the offense is sort of simple, and it was designed to have the quarterback get the ball out really quickly. And he really wasn't going through full field reads there. And so, what teams had sort of noticed watching him is, man, he's a little slower processing than we thought he would be. He's not seeing it as fast as we would like. That's something that can be learned over time, but it's something that definitely showed up. The processing wasn't as fast as you'd hope it would be coming out of college. Then the second thing was, his athleticism hasn't translated to the NFL the same way some people thought it would. And you watched him enough at Clemson to know, Rich, he was a real run threat, he made a lot of plays with his feet at the college level.
Yeah.
And
that 31-0 win, as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken.
No.
Oh, that was Deshaun. My bad. Okay. Yeah. My bad.
Loss to Clemson, but we did wind up getting him. That ability to create on your own, to create yardage, to escape, to buy time to throw, it just hasn't translated as much. And maybe that's just not being as comfortable with it, with what you're doing and everything around you the same way he was at Clemson. Or maybe it's everybody's bigger and faster and stronger around you, and it's a little harder to get away than it was. Mm. So I think if you add all of it up, Rich, is I'm the first to say, I remember talking, I talked to scouts about him for 2.5 years, and it was always this guy is the next, Peyton Manning, John Elway, Andrew Luck, he's in that category. What I'm getting back now is, he's a little more raw than we thought. So the talent's there, but when you add up everything that I just said, it's just, he is sort of more of prospect than ready-made player, if that makes sense.
So who gets the golden ticket that Urban torched? Who gets the golden ticket, you think, to coach him?
To coach him?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, part of the problem, Rich, is that they are keeping their general manager in place. Mm. And, that issue has already come up you know, in my conversations over the last 2 weeks, there are coaches who flat out aren't going to go there because Trent Baalke's there. And that's with, you know, a generational type of prospect in Trevor Lawrence at the position.
Wow.
And so it's, I mean, that's part of the issue right now is like they're kind of like sorting through things. And it's, you know, there are coaches that just flat out aren't going to go there because of what happened with Trent in San Francisco and because he has a certain reputation of, you know, I mean, let's call it what is. Like, people think he stabbed a bunch of people in San Francisco in the back and that it's already happened in Jacksonville some too. So, you know, if they're going to hang on to Trent as a general manager, they're going to have to sort of overcome that with whoever they hire as their coach. Now, I will say this, like, one thing I have gotten back already is they do plan on making this a pretty extensive search, and that, like, last year, they're going to do the opposite of what they did last year, where last year we knew what they were doing from the start, and they targeted one guy, and they went and got him. This year, I think they really want to go into it and talk to a lot of people, and they've already talked to a lot of people, and kind of go through a full process and make a decision that way. And, I mean, two of the names that you hear early on and guys that have already talked to them are Jim Caldwell and Doug Peterson. And obviously both those guys have extensive history working with quarterbacks, so that would be a plus. But I think more than anything else, like, you know, finding somebody who can come in and sort of calm things down in what's been a pretty chaotic, after what's been a pretty chaotic year is job number one.
Well, Albert, I appreciate you calling in and accepting my invitation to come on, not only because I always appreciate you and your information is impeccable and the way you delivered is terrific, but you were also curious to check on me about me in the last 6 days, even though we've been texting nonstop in the interim. So thank you, Albert. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Albert.
I'm glad you're doing well.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Albert.
And
but you knew that already.
Hey, in all seriousness,
yeah.
Congrats on a great year. Like, seriously, like that you know, I as somebody who knows how it feels to go through years like that, congratulations. Right. I'm sure it was a fantastic year.
Right. Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show after hitting a triple with his information. Very good. Thank you, Albert. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I've been home before. I've been home.
Goodbye, Albert. Thanks for calling. Albert Breer, everybody. All right, we'll take a break. We're back to finish up this hour in a second. Fred Godelli with some great John Madden stories from Sunday Night Football coming up.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Tomorrow. You said tomorrow.
844-204-RICH, number to dial. I've added another guest. He's been texting me. He just said good morning.
That's it's an AB?
Who just starts his text exchange with good morning?
Zap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I said to him, and then he called me during the Breer segment. Oh. I'm like, I'm on the air. And he goes, I figured as much. He left an audio message with a statement of why he thinks the Bucks should not be worried about all this. And I'm like, you want to come on the show and say it? He goes, sure.
99.
Okay, I'm interested.
So he's going to be on after Fred Godelli now. So here's how we're doing. Okay. Fred Godelli, the longtime producer of Sunday Night Football. He was also the producer of the ESPYs from 97 to 01. I believe that is the Norm MacDonald year, correct? You want to look up, when did Norm MacDonald host the ESPYs?
That would have been the Norm.
You've got the Google in front of you.
Yeah.
So the years that Stuart and I did the pre-show.
That was 98.
Yeah, so. And I wanted him to tell the Madden stories that he's been telling to certain, you know, written blogs and written, you know, columnists and stuff
like that.
I really
just want to know if that joke was in the run-through. Was it in rehearsal?
I want to ask him those questions. I want Madden stories. I want Norm MacDonald stories. And I want to know, how do you produce a team, two teams that kneel down 90 times? That's coming up in hour three. But I also want to return to the phone lines. Justin in Atlanta, who was giving us nuggets about what was going on the sideline.
He's still on it. He's telling us
what's going on the sideline in Tampa. He said he's got some stuff about the Nets. And all right, Justin, you're on the air again. What's up, sir? You're back.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Just a quick note. Everything that I was talking about in the previous conversation, Coach Arians pretty much said.
He did, by the way. Yes, you're not wrong. So you said you have some information about the Nets. Go for it.
All right. You ready to sit down for this?
Okay.
All right. And what was the big sporting event in 2016?
The big sports intervention, you said?
No, the big sporting event in 2016.
Cavs coming back.
Okay.
Against the Warriors.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was the Olympics.
Yes, that too. Yeah.
Right, in Rio, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Who was on the basketball team for the U.S. Basketball team for the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil?
Okay. You're asking guys to Google or know things off the top of their heads, and they're furiously doing that right now.
It's a rhetorical question because we were talking about Kyrie Irving.
KD and Kyrie were on the same team.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I've been to Brazil twice. Every time you go to that country, you have to be vaccinated at least 6 different shots. Kyrie Irving was there on the Olympic team. All the Olympic players have to be, all of the players from all of the sports,
right,
if they're coming from a different country, have to be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to embrace a mandate from another country to play in another country, but not embrace the mandate in this country, seems a bit hypocritical.
And, you know, I hear you, Justin. I'm just assuming he had what he had to be vaccinated for to go to Brazil. He probably had to be vaccinated. He was already vaccinated for just to go to school in New Jersey. You know what I mean? Like,
in Brazil, there are certain vaccinations that you must have: hepatitis A, hepatitis B.
Okay.
You have to have the malaria.
True.
You have to have a lot of mosquitoes carrying diseases. There's very special vaccinations that you have to have, and they have to be updated prior to you even entering into that country. And I'm sure you know a lot of reporters, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you know a lot of coaches that they should ask that question during the next interview with Kyrie Irving.
Thank you, Justin. I'm at the end of the hour. Appreciate the call. That's hour number three.
Justin needs to call back.